You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Mr. President, it remains my sincere hope that the Senate will have the opportunity to consider the Flag Amendment today, June 14, National Flag Day.
I'm an amendment to be, yes, an amendment to be. And I'm hoping that they'll ratify me.
New amendment imposing term limits on Capitol Hill.
A constitutional amendment to try to reverse Citizens United.
It's a constitutional amendment that mandates a balanced budget and forces the federal government to live within its means.
Oh, yeah!
You're listening to Civics 101. I'm Nick Capodice.
I'm Hannah McCarthy.
And today we are talking about amendments. Not any amendment in particular, but how they happen. The process for amending the Constitution.
I'm really glad that we're talking about this, Nick, because we talk so much about our supreme law of the land, what it says and what it means. But this is another thing entirely. This is how we change the Constitution. And not to bury the lead, as we say in the journalism business, but this is pretty hard to do, isn't it?
By the way, Hannah, do you know why lead, as in like the introductory section of a story, is spelled L-E-D-E in journalism?
I don't think I do know. I figured it was for the same nonsense reason we spell graph, G-R-A-F.
Well, apparently it's so it wouldn't be confused with the word lead, which meant a strip of metal that would separate different lines of type.
That's fascinating. And speaking of burying the lead, Nick, you're doing it right now.
I sure am. Where were we? The Constitution is very difficult to amend.
The U.S. Constitution is the hardest constitution to amend, not only out of any national constitution in the world that's operative, but out of any that's ever been ratified or promulgated. So it's really, really hard to amend the national constitution.
This is Robinson Woodward Burns.
My name is Robinson Woodward Burns, and I'm an associate professor of political science at Howard University.
Robinson has talked with us a few times. He's the author of Hidden Laws, How State Constitutions Stabilize American Politics. Now, he said the framers were kind of in the dark when it came to altering the Constitution, as they were in the dark about a lot of things. It was all pretty darn new.
The process to amend the U.S. Constitution was a novel process. The U.S. Constitution is the world's oldest national constitution to adhere in a single document. And so the framers of the Constitution didn't have any other national constitutions as models from which to work. There were a handful of state constitutions. The oldest of them, though, was only 11 years old. And because there was relatively little model for how constitutions should be amended, either from other national constitutions or from state constitutions, the framers of the U.S. Constitution came up with fairly arbitrary cutoff points.
And I'll get to those arbitrary cutoff points in a second. But I just want to throw in one line from James Madison's Federalist 43, where he talks about the need for an amendment process. He wrote, quote, "The useful alterations will be suggested by experience could not but be foreseen. It was requisite, therefore, that a mode for introducing them should be provided."
As in, even we, who shall come to be known as brilliant, perfect people, who came up with this Constitution, cannot predict everything.
Pobody's nerfect, Hannah.
Okay, Nick, I understand that it's hard to amend the Constitution. It has only happened 27 times so far. But can we just talk about how it happens? Can we talk about where in the Constitution the amendment process is laid out?
It is in Article 5, Hannah. I was trying to come up with a mnemonic device for this, and I like pictured James Madison saying, "And if any of this doesn't work out, we'll just amend it later." And giving Alexander Hamilton a high five.
Like the freeze frame at the end of some 80s after school special.
Yeah, and like fades out and music comes up and the credits roll. Alexander's like, "Nice work, Jemmy."
I think a lot about that summer that we wrote the Constitution, and then later those 85 essays we wrote supporting its ratification. I didn't know until years later those would be the most important days in my life.
Anyways, Article 5.
So Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution establishes the amendment process. And what it says is there's a two-step path to amending the U.S. Constitution. First, an amendment has to pass either two-thirds of both houses of Congress or a convention called by two-thirds of the states on petition to Congress. The second stage was the ratification stage, either three-quarters of the states in their legislatures or in special conventions have to ratify or approve an amendment. And then the amendment is enrolled as part of the Constitution.
So it's a two-step process.
Right, but there has been a new step. I'll actually call it a norm instead of a step, which is that the amendment then has to be certified.
Specifically, it's the National Archivist who's responsible for certifying the amendment. That's a relatively new step. Now, there are other parts that aren't part of Article 5, like the Supreme Court has affirmed for about 100 years that Congress can specify an amendment has to pass within a certain period of time, usually 7 years. But the actual text of Article 5 only includes those two steps, the proposal step and the ratification step.
Just to recap, the proposal step requires two-thirds of both the Senate and the House of Representatives to agree and say we should have this amendment. And then if they do agree, it goes to the states for ratification, where three-quarters of the states need to do the same thing.
Exactly.
Real quick, what is three-quarters of 50?
It's 37.5.
Do they round it down or up?
Well, they round it up. It needs to be at least three-quarters of the states, so it is 38.
Okay, got it. Now, Robinson said there was another way to do the proposal step, that instead of Congress doing it, two-thirds of the states can get together and propose an amendment.
They can, and I'm way ahead of you here, McCarthy. Two-thirds of 50 is 33.33, so we round it up to 34.
Now, I know that a lot, like a lot of amendments have been proposed over the years.
I'm going to get to that.
But how many have actually technically been proposed as in sent to the states for ratification?
Yeah, it's like this tough linguistic thing. Like you hear all the time, Senator so-and-so has proposed an amendment to do something or other. But for an amendment to really be quote-unquote proposed, it needs that two-thirds majority in both houses or the states. So here is the final tally so far of amendments that made it past that first step that went to the states for ratification. First, by the method of two-thirds of both houses, 33 times.
Okay. And by two-thirds of the states?
The grand total of state-proposed federal amendments is that dangerous idea, Hannah, zero.
Zero.
Zilch. It has never happened.
There's never been a convention of the states organized to propose amendments. And there have been attempts to do this over time. The most recent attempts, one in the 1960s when the Supreme Court made the states reapportion or rewrite their state legislative and congressional legislative districts. There was real backlash from the states, in part because a lot of legislators would have lost their jobs at the state level. And so they started petitioning Congress to call it a convention to overrule the Supreme Court. Now, ultimately, they fall short of that two-thirds supermajority. You need 34 states to do that.
Another attempt happened in the 1980s during the height of fiscal conservatism. Some states got together to push for a balanced budget amendment. There were a lot of big budgets at this time in history, especially for military and defense spending.
What was actually happening is they were asking for a statute. And so people will say we actually came close to a balanced budget amendment to that 34-state threshold. But according to a historian who surveyed those records, David Kivik, the answer is probably not. We actually probably didn't get that close. So at no point in history have we actually successfully called a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution.
All right. If 33 amendments went to the states for ratification and we only have 27, what were the six that didn't make the cut?
I will talk about one of the six after a quick break, but the rest will go into extra credit.
And what is extra credit, you ask?
I can just hear them asking, Hannah.
Why, it is our free, silly, trivia-filled newsletter that we put out every other week. You can and you should sign up at our website, civics101podcast.org.
Mm-hmm. Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fight. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We're back. We're talking about how we amend the U.S. Constitution. And Nick, you were on the verge of telling me about one of the six amendments that made it to the ratification step but did not cross the finish line.
I was indeed. This is an amendment that has been argued about for over 100 years, the Equal Rights Amendment.
As a quick aside, Nick and I did an episode on the Equal Rights Amendment many, many years ago.
6 years ago. Can you believe it?
Six years. Be that as it may, there is a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, and it needs updating. Thank you, Hannah. And here to tell us about the long journey of the ERA, again, is Robinson Woodward Burns.
There have been patterns in kind of amendment proposal around the Equal Rights Amendment going back to 1923. That was when the first Equal Rights Amendment was proposed on the heels of the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed female suffrage. The Equal Rights Amendment, just as the female suffrage amendment forbade disenfranchisement on the basis of sex, the Equal Rights Amendment forbade denial of equal treatment under the law on the basis of sex.
The phrasing of this amendment varied over the years. It was reintroduced in every single Congress, but it just never made it out. Labor unions opposed it initially, working women supported it, and we don't see a shift until 50 years later.
By the 1970s, the feminist movement and the labor movement had coalesced around the ERA. And in 1973, you actually see a movement on the heels of the Roe case in which Congress passes the amendment and sends it to the states. And it comes really close. It actually comes only three states short. So you need 3/4 of the states to ratify an amendment. And it got to 35.
But the ERA hit its deadline in 1979. And then there were hearings in Congress to extend the deadline, and those came up against fierce opposition.
There was actually a lot of backlash from some conservative feminists like Phyllis Schlafly, who thought that it would force women into gender-neutral bathrooms, for example, or that it might allow same-sex marriage or access to abortion.
And I think it's very interesting that these women who try to tell the world that they're self-reliant and independent and as capable as men look to the federal government to solve all the problems.
And so the backlash to it almost killed the amendment.
However, in the 2010s, there was a revival of interest in the Equal Rights Amendment, in part due to the growing Me Too movement, and some new scholarship came to light that the amendment never actually had a deadline in its literal text.
So the amendment was, according to these scholars, still live. The remaining three states actually ratified it. Virginia was the last. But what was tricky is that it happened during the Trump administration. And so the amendment then went to the National Archivist, who kind of had this tricky choice of whether to figure out whether these final three ratifications were valid. And the Trump administration, the Department of Justice, sent a memo to the archivist quickly saying that, no, you can't ratify the amendment. Now, I argued in a piece in The Atlantic that because the archivist actually answers to Congress, the Trump administration couldn't do this. But politically, at that point, the issue was dead. Now, maybe had Virginia waited a year until the Biden administration, we'd have had a different outcome. But ultimately, it looks like politically, the Equal Rights Amendment is dead.
Okay, last thing here, Nick. What about the other ones, the other amendments that were proposed but never made it out of Congress? How many have there been?
There have been, as of 2021, 11,970 amendments proposed to the Constitution, and only 27 of those have been ratified. That's a 0.002% success rate.
11,970.
Yep.
What have these been about? I mean, there's a lot, but like, what do people try to get amended?
Everything, Hannah. To establish every American's right to a home, to ban flag burning, to make the president's term 8 years and the representative's 4, to prohibit abortion, to allow abortion, to prohibit school prayer, to mandate school prayer. 700 of these are about prayer. To prohibit public drunkenness, to ban dueling, to put God in the preamble. I downloaded a spreadsheet of all of them, and I spent entirely too long reading it.
There was an amendment, for example, 100 years ago to rename the United States of America the United States of the World, speaking to the colonial ambitions of the United States at the time.
Who proposed that?
I'm glad you asked. Lucas Miller of Wisconsin, who proposed it in his first term in 1893, and he said, quote, "It is possible for this republic to grow through the admission of new states until every nation on earth has become part of it." Miller did not get elected to a second term.
Well, this brings me to a really big question, and I guess I could guess the answer based on the proposal of a lot of bills that never get passed, but why do members of Congress propose these amendments knowing that there is pretty much no chance whatsoever that they will pass?
It's a timely question. After Ron DeSantis dropped out of the Republican primary, the first thing he did was propose 4 amendments to the Constitution. Now, Ron DeSantis didn't seriously think these amendments were going to pass, right? Every amendment that's proposed is almost certainly doomed, especially in today's really polarized Congress, where we have very narrow majorities of only 1 or 2 seats in any given chamber, far short of the 2/3 supermajorities necessary to propose an amendment. Why do members of Congress, or why did Ron DeSantis propose amendments? It's what we call in political science position taking. If a legislator or a lawmaker wants to put themselves out in front of the public, they can do that through amendments, by proposing amendments, because amendments are low risk. There's actually pretty low chance it will pass, and so they can just put out throwaway amendments. And an amendment might actually look like it's a pretty serious or significant measure to the public. After all, it's a proposal to change the basic law of the country. So if you want to seem like you're doing something serious or important with pretty low risk or low cost, one way to do that is to propose an amendment. It's a way to stay in the public's eye if you feel like you may be less and less relevant. And that's exactly why Ron DeSantis threw out these kind of 4 throwaway amendments to the Constitution.
What's interesting to me is that right now, in February of 2024, we're in a record-setting moment of government inaction, if you will, right? The current Congress, the 118th, passed 27 bills total in 2023, the fewest in modern history. So if you're not legislating and you don't want to get into trouble by proposing a controversial bill, this amendment signaling, what is it, maybe all you have?
Yeah, and to further that point, actual amendments that make it through the process, they haven't happened for a long, long time. Our most recent one, the 27th Amendment, which is about the rather humdrum notion of not changing Congress's salary mid-session, yeah, it was ratified in 1992, but it was written in 1789. It was one of the 12 to be included in the Bill of Rights, and it was just recently revisited. It's not new.
No amendment proposed by Congress has actually cleared ratification since the early 1970s. And so we're in this period of real decline of national amendment. And what I remind my students is that, again, there's a live tradition of amendment at the state level. There are almost 24 states that allow voters to propose revision of their laws, either through statutes or in either 18 or 19 cases, depending on whether you count Mississippi, revision of laws through constitutional amendment. And so, you know, because we see so much stasis and gridlock at the national level, I encourage, you know, my students or people interested in reform to look at their state constitutions and local laws and statutes.
We say it so much, Hannah. You have to think at some point people will start to do it.
Yeah, it's just not as fun. If you want change, you gotta think local. This episode was produced by Nick Capodice and me, Hannah McCarthy. Music in this episode by Bo Mull, PW, Apollo, Beigel, Kevin McLeod, and Dusty Dex. If you like us, please, please, please let us know. Deep down, we are still those theater kids eagerly awaiting notes at the end of tech. Leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're here for you as long as we are all trying to keep this republic. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR, New Hampshire Public Radio.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.